I have a tiny Fender Vibrochamp practice amp that I
that you make your servants lift.
And I'm sorry, when you got to go up those when you got to go up the back steps of Gabe's Oasis in Iowa City, up those slanted steps when they get all icy.
What are you talking about?
Iowa City throwback. I love it.
We're back with your favorite Midwest laconic podcast. Rock Hard Caucus is here again. This is episode 146, I think. And to start things off, I have to apologize because Evan and I have had a Sunday streak going, and we had to break it last week because I was too sick to record.
Well, hope you're feeling better now.
Better than I was a week ago, yeah.
Yeah, it's a
illness
bummer.
It's a fucking mess.
It is indeed. It's been a hot topic in our country the last 4 years. So,
yeah, I mean, my getting sick is a moral failing. Actually,
it is. It always is. It means that you didn't take the proper precautions.
Yeah. Again, I tested negative multiple times for COVID, so I don't know what I have.
Yeah. Well, have you heard this about the H5N1 flu circulating in bovine? Apparently there's a bird flu that's migrated to cows, and you're not supposed to drink any raw milk. So if you've been drinking any raw milk lately, Justin, you should probably stop because you could get potentially exposed to pathogens. But
I have not had any of that.
Pasteurized milk, it's all good. So yogurt,
okay,
cottage cheese, ice cream.
Yeah, I don't know that I've had much dairy at all. I guess I've had some
butter,
cheese,
cream, cheese. It's all good.
That Louis Pasteur, he knew what was up.
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff. He's really, really a good guy.
Yeah. So even though we missed last week's, we didn't put an episode out. We have released two episodes on Patreon in the meantime, between our 420 special and now. So people who pay us money, they got their content, but you freeloaders, you got nothing.
Yeah. We were just discussing, I just signed up for the Patreon. So
for his own podcast.
I am now actually, I do not make any income from this podcast. I am now actually paying to be on the podcast. it's basically a tip for Justin to produce and host for it. So
yeah. If you want this podcast to make any sort of economic sense, you listening right now, you need to sign up for the Patreon. No, we do it out of love. Love for this state and the people in it.
Yeah, for sure.
Otherwise, we would have quit a long time ago because we do not make any money off this. Okay, today we're going to talk about the end of the legislative session. So we talked with Keenan Crow a couple months ago about all the anti-LGBTQ stuff that the state legislature was doing. God, I'm sure we talked about other the education stuff that the legislature was doing, but I feel like we kind of lost track. They write a lot of bills, they pass a lot of bills, and it's really boring to try to keep up with all of it. So now that it's over, I thought now would be a good opportunity to look back and see kind of an overview of what our lovely state legislators passed this session. There's no better way to do that than with Representative Steve Holt's article in the Iowa Standard. You know about the Iowa Standard, Evan?
A little bit. I don't know what they're the standard for. I guess standard for bad journalism.
Yeah. I'd say that's true. I'm looking at the about page on the Iowa Standard. It's hard to know when it started, but there seems to be unanimous consent among conservatives that the media is no friend to conservatism. Maybe it's because of this from September 5th of 1993. A gerontocratic Ronald Reagan. How are you supposed to say that? Gerontocracy or gerontocratic?
Gerontocratic, yeah.
Gerontocratic,
I think so.
Yeah.
I guess.
A gerontocratic Ronald Reagan took this AIDS plague less seriously than Gerald Ford had taken swine flu. After all, he didn't need the ghettos and he didn't want the gays. This is a quote from CBS's John Leonard on Sunday morning. So I guess this is an example of the media being hostile to conservatism. This is why the Iowa Standard exists. It's because of this quote from CBS in 1993 about how Ronald Reagan didn't care about AIDS.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't think they really cared about that so much, you know, conservatives.
It could be this 1993 quote from Washington Post reporter Michael Weisskopf, though. That might be why the Iowa Standard exists. And that quote is, corporations pay public relations firms millions of dollars to contrive the kind of grassroots response that Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson can galvanize in a televised sermon. Their followers are largely poor, uneducated, and easy to command. Is that even...
Whoa. Are they attacking... grassroots conservatives who listen to Pat Robertson?
That's not even like editorializing. That's just like listing a couple of facts. Like, corporations pay public PR firms, but Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson have like have followers because they're on TV, and those followers fit a certain demographic. What are you mad about?
You're just saying that you would have more influence if you were a televangelist.
Right.
Like, if you would have a lot, it's true, I think, you would have more influence if you, you know, what's the, like, public broadcast, what's the Christian station? You can, like, get it over the air. It's not public broadcasting, but.
Yeah, what is that called?
I don't know, but I feel like, there's a lot of older rural Iowans who are tuning into that kind of thing. You could probably add some more propaganda onto their plate.
Oh man, there's so many Christian. There is a Christian broadcasting network. I don't know if that's the one you're thinking of.
I don't know. I just know I hook up the rabbit ears and flip through the channels and end up seeing.
And you leave that one on 24 hours a day.
Yeah. I do see that Iowa Standard is hiring a grassroots engagement director. And they're also soliciting for PayPal or Venmo donations at the top of every article that they post.
Yep.
Which is definitely a mark of quality. But, yeah. You know, journalism's hard business, especially now. So,
While they continue with...
Might see more of that in the future.
Those two quotes were examples of mainstream media hostility to conservatism, right? So the Iowa Standard is stepping in because there's such a lack of conservative news alternatives, right?
Yeah, right.
So
Fox News, Truth Social, One America.
Even in Iowa, there's the Iowa Torch. There's every radio station in the state.
the Field Report, right?
Iowa Field Report. That's the name of that one, isn't it?
I think so.
So Iowa Standard describing themselves. Sure, we slant to the right, but by no means are we beholden to the Republican Party, and we will be more than willing to present the Democrat side of an argument. We will report Iowa political news fairly, and we will be your reliable source of information. We will likely upset Republicans as much as we upset Democrats. Okay, so shifting over to this other tab where they just reprint a Republican state representative's newsletter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously, they're not. Republicans are going to be really mad when they're allowed to write articles, for this newspaper.
Yeah.
Like, as elected officials.
So, Steve Holt, recapping the legislative session, major accomplishments and a few things that they didn't manage to pass that he was upset about. And this is this is from Freedom Watch. Freedom Watch is apparently the name of Steve Holt's newsletter. I don't know how to get on the mailing list for that. I Googled a few things, couldn't find any sort of like sign up for that.
Yeah, this site is really, I mean, they got like a banner with like Comic Sans asking for money. And then they have just like this huge headshot of Steve Holt who looks like a Cenobite. And it's really off-putting.
Oh, man. I was, before we started recording, I was thinking about how to talk about his appearance. I feel like I don't I don't want to make fun of the way people look, because there's a lot of like really nice, cool people who happen to be unattractive.
That's right. That's right.
I don't, you know, if anybody listens to this who looks like Steve Holt, I'm sorry, but he looks like the end of Return of the Jedi where Darth Vader takes his helmet off.
That's right. there's some people where you can like lift that, you know, you can attack their appearance. It's fine.
I tweeted something about Richard Hanania yesterday because I was just looking at pictures of him.
Oh, I saw you. I wasn't sure who that was. And I was like, I know this is some freak.
He looks kind of like Pee Wee Herman, R.I.P.
Yeah.
Okay, so Steve Holt's top accomplishments from this legislative session. In the area of education, they raised the beginning teacher pay to the fifth highest in the nation, set the minimum standard salary for 12-year teachers to $62,000, and allocated an additional $14 million to raise pay for paraprofessionals. These increases will be funded by the state.
Wow. I mean, that just like puts into perspective, work for 12 years as a teacher and your salary's capped at $62,000.
Like, well, it's minimum. Seems,
okay. All right. Minimum floor of 62,000.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people are making, you know, significantly more than that as public school teachers, but it doesn't seem likely that there's that many. I mean, that still seems meager.
Mm-hmm. I don't have the data on that, but yeah, definitely not a well-paying job. And you got to take that, like, it's presented here devoid of any context, but you have to take that in the context of the ongoing destruction of public education in Iowa, mm-hmm. and the understaffing for the past several years since COVID started. You know, nobody wants to do this shit, so they have to pay more.
We'll make your job a lot shittier, but we'll pay you slightly more.
Yeah, it doesn't make up for how bad the job has gotten. And we got a couple more examples of how they're making it worse here too. Reformed AEA funding to create more accountability and flexibility for schools while protecting the core AEA mission of delivering special education services.
Yeah, this one's like confusing if you don't have a kid, I don't think, or especially if you don't have a kid who has a need for special education services.
Yeah.
But I think the flexibility for schools thing is like, I mean, you have to like read between the lines on like all of this shit, but
school
basically
choice.
What they're trying to do
thing.
Is the same thing, is they want the states to have more, or the state legislature and government to have more control over the AEAs and the funding.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I guess they are allowing the school districts to determine where the funding for AEA, we're not defunding it, but we're just changing how it's allocated and putting it in the hands of the school districts, which then are beholden to the state government.
Right, right, right.
So more so than what the AEAs were. But I don't know a whole lot about this.
Yeah, this was something that I struggled to understand as it was ongoing. But I think the biggest thing to take away from it is, as they were proposing and passing this bill, everybody who works at an AEA, everybody who has a kid who benefits from an AEA, express their opposition to this plan.
Yeah.
Nobody who this affects wanted it to happen.
Yeah. And then they're like, I saw something that Kim Reynolds said, like, you know, if services are impacted, then there's always like Medicaid waivers that you can apply for, which are like super clogged up with bureaucracy and hard to navigate for a lot of people, mm-hmm. especially low income people, and are just another barrier to getting the services that you actually need for your kid.
A big one, according to Steve Holt anyway, made our students and staff safer in school with investment in school safety infrastructure and by lowering emergency response times with the creation of a new voluntary permit program allowing staff to carry firearms if they meet the high standards of training laid out in the bill.
So high standards.
I love the lowering emergency response times sort of take on that. You know, if a guy is holding a loaded weapon in the school already, right. You know, then you don't have to wait for the cops to show up.
Are they referring to like SRO officers as school infrastructure? Like, what's the infrastructure part of this? Do you know?
I don't know what the school safety infrastructure could possibly be. metal detectors, barbed wire fences, yeah, stuff
bullet,
like that.
Bulletproof, bulletproof windows.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that's, I don't remember any articles getting into that part of the guns in school bill. But Steve also says schools may also use school resource officers or private security if training requirements are met. I'm pretty sure the school resource officers thing is like school districts are actually mandated to have SROs unless their school board votes to opt out.
Yeah.
So it's a little more than they may also use school resource officers. And this is the one that we were talking about with history professor John Williams a few episodes ago. The state legislature prioritized history and civics in K-12 education, a long overdue imperative if our republic is to endure.
Oh, so it's an if? Not a lot of confidence in the republic here.
No. Well, it's in peril, you know, if we don't... well, it's not indoctrination. If we don't teach the children the proper adoration and fealty to our republic, then, you know, how can it possibly survive? We mandated that critical American history and Western civilization be covered, and also directed that the Holocaust be taught. so that, yeah, such horrors never happen in our own country. It's too late for that, buddy.
And by critical American history, they mean, you know, the important things that happen. They don't mean criticizing American history.
Yeah, he shouldn't have used that word.
Yeah.
He's actually very opposed to any sort of critical theory in a history class.
Right. Yeah. Especially critical race theory, which kind of comes into the next next bullet point.
It does. But I don't want to skip this part of this bullet point. So the Holocaust must be taught so that such horrors never happen in our own country. I just like to remind everyone that the Nazis learned from our country's own treatment of its indigenous population. So we're kind of already guilty, yeah, a little bit there. But he also put in parentheses there, recent events on college campuses show the importance of this initiative.
Yep. Just remember, if you're smearing college protesters as anti-Semitic, then you're on board with this guy. You are on the same boat. You have the same ideology as this guy.
Yeah, for sure. The reason that the kids on college campuses these days are protesting Israel's actions in Gaza is because they're ignorant of, yeah, the biggest genocide of the 20th century. It's not because they actually know way more about it than you. It's that they didn't learn about it in school. Who fucking went through a public school education without learning about the Holocaust?
Yeah, absolutely absurd.
It's the thing, like, that happened in the 20th century. Like, if you learned one thing, yeah, it was probably that.
Right. And it's like, they don't teach, I mean, it's, again, just like jingoist bullshit. Mm-hmm. I mean, they teach that the Holocaust was a horrible thing that happened and America was solely the country that prevented it from happening and will prevent it from happening again while they're fucking funding this atrocity in Gaza.
Right,
like,
right. Yeah. We went in there and we put a stop to it.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
It was bad and we stopped it.
After several years of refusing to do anything about it.
Yeah.
And after Russia took care of most of it before we got involved.
Yeah. And also influencing a lot of the racial science of the Nazi party with our eugenics programs and shit.
Well, yeah, and we also had, you know, leaders of American industry financially supporting the Nazis in Germany as well.
Yep.
Next bullet point. The Iowa legislature has prohibited Iowa's regent universities from spending one dime on so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion offices that divide students, silence conservative voices, and impose ideological conformity on campus, outside of what was required by law. So it sounds like some of it, they still have to do it, and our state is being domed by the federal government.
That is a very funny to say, outside of what is required by law. I guess, yeah, they're talking about federal law, but it's a funny thing to say as a legislator.
Yeah. Well, there's certain things where our state is like, fuck federal law, for example, on immigration. Yeah. But when it comes to DEI, they just don't have the, I don't know, what would you call it? They don't have the balls to just go for it. Violate federal law by making colleges more racist.
Yeah. I don't know what federal laws are on the books that I mean, I can't imagine that they're that strong. Yeah. But yeah. I love the fact that it's like dividing students. Like most people probably like have to go through the training and then outside of that, never think about their DEI program again.
Yeah. I don't know. Like,
well, I know there's more than DEI. I don't know. I'm not super well versed on that.
Neither am I really. Like, it doesn't really impact my working life. Like, I've never had any like mandated DEI stuff, I don't think, in the past like decade.
Yeah.
It's mostly like had your voluntary involvement with that stuff.
Yeah, you have had your free speech training though every year.
That's right. Ensuring that I don't silence any conservative voices on campus. Why would I silence them? I like to talk about them and make fun of them.
Yeah.
And Steve also says that DEI programs turn the dream of Dr. King on its head, teaching our children to judge by skin color instead of character. The old standby.
Yeah, I'm sure Dr. King would have been a big supporter of this man. And it's just funhouse mirror shit.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. Just completely divorced from any context whatsoever.
Any actual affirmative efforts towards addressing ongoing racial disparity, racial discrimination, you are subverting the will of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who said that we must only judge each other by the content of our character.
Like, come on, man.
I don't even know what this last one is. Refocused our universities away from training social justice warriors and back to preparing a strong workforce ready to fill high-demand jobs in Iowa.
Oh, so they got rid of the boot camp for Antifa super soldiers? They got rid of that program that was being funded?
It would be kind of helpful if he like included bill numbers here, because I don't know what the hell this one is, aside from, like, this is separate from defunding DEI? I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of any anti-social justice warriors bills. I mean,
your college education is for you. It's to prepare you to sit at a fucking desk for 8 hours a day, plus commute. It is not for you to learn anything about humanity. Go to work.
Yeah. Also, I don't think I've even really heard the term social justice warrior for, like, years. Like, that's...
Yeah, it kind of gave way to just calling everything woke.
Yeah.
In terms of taxes, Steve is excited that, once again, we delivered significant income tax relief for all taxpaying Iowans by speeding up the implementation of the flat tax and lowering the rate to 3.8% to be implemented in 2025. Oh, boy.
Yeah. It's going to be Kansas all over again, I think.
That's what I was thinking. We're following the Kansas model.
Yeah, he says these tax cuts are sustainable.
He says it's sustainable because we have several billion dollars in reserve.
Yeah, so that's not how that works.
We can only afford to do this because we happen to have a big pile of money right here. So what happens when that runs out? Then we just cut all of the fucking social programs. I mean, what little we have.
I think you might be onto something there.
I mean, I know several people whose, myself included, state taxes have gone up.
Yeah, I don't understand.
What do they do?
Well, I know the last tax cuts they passed would basically only impact your taxes if you made more than like $60,000 or $70,000 a year. Other than that, like, I mean, which is, you know, pretty much in line with the flat tax, which,
yeah,
as we know, is regressive and low income people have to pay the highest percentage of their total income.
Right.
By design, of course. Like,
But he called this tax relief for all taxpaying Iowans.
Yeah, I guess I don't know what the, like, standardized percentage of... I don't know what the Iowa tax code looks like at all. But flat tax, bad, stupid.
Yeah, of course.
It's going to come back to bite us.
I remember, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, people would talk about flat tax as just, like, a crank, sort of, like, wild libertarian fantasy.
Yeah.
And now multiple states have gone through with it.
Yeah. Herman Cain's 999 plan.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Ron Paul.
Yeah.
Big flat tax guy. It's more fair. It's flat.
Right. What could be more fair than that? Everybody pays the same percent.
Now, how about this? Everyone makes the same income, and it's like pretty high.
We should skip around, actually, since you brought that up. It's part of the Protecting Our Founding Values section of Steve Holt's recap. They banned guaranteed income programs that assault our work ethic and march us further down the destructive path of socialism. Steve is very proud that he floor managed this legislation. So this was directly targeting a program in Des Moines, right? There was a pilot program
to give people like $1,000 a month for guaranteed income. The thing, conservatives should know this better than anyone, but people generally like more money than less money. So it's like, even if you give people money, a lot of times they're still going to want to make more, and they're going to do things to, like, $1,000 a month is a godsend for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, it's not that much money. Like, it's enough for a lot of, you know, household expenses and stuff, but it's not enough to, like, get you ahead in the long run or, like, secure your, like, retirement or anything like that. Like, these programs are not, like, that generous.
The lives of most people right now are, you know, work as much as you can, like, get as many hours as you can to cover your basic expenses, barely cover those probably every month.
Yeah.
Even though you're working like as much as you possibly can with the work you can find, you're probably barely covering your expenses. This was a program that would like take a little bit of the pressure off. And once you're out of that grind of just constant, you know, trying to get as many hours as you can just to barely cover your rent, I feel like rich people don't understand the like bandwidth that opens up when you know that I can cover this month. It like opens up your mind to like being able to be more productive in other ways.
It actually helps you make more money and pay more taxes for the government. Like, it's insane. Also, it's like, does that really like getting that extra bit of money every month? Is that really like make you not afraid of like some horrible health scare for you or your family? Like, is that really enough to like, that's better than no safety net. But I mean, we don't really have much of a safety net to begin with. So it's like, I don't know. I think we could probably reimagine all of these services for an actual guaranteed, standard of living for people.
Yeah, that's my whole state of mind is, what if everything was actually oriented towards providing for the basic needs of all people instead of everything being a profit motive?
Well, that's
The road to socialism.
Destructive path of socialism.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, going back to finish this chronologically, the rule of law was another subject of legislation this session. What does that phrase mean to you, Evan? The rule of law?
It doesn't have any positive associations.
It's the boot on my neck.
Yeah, exactly.
Steve says, this is what he's celebrating. They gave Iowa law enforcement additional policy tools and $2 million of new money to protect Iowans from illegal immigration and related crimes such as illegal drugs and human trafficking. This is a priority I worked on and floor managed. Steve, who are the people being human trafficked, do you think?
Yeah. Ugh.
$2 million of new money. New money. I didn't know we could make that. I didn't know that.
Well, you have a flat tax. I mean, you're reducing the revenue, but there's miraculously new money just appearing out of nowhere to fund more cops.
I mean, give $2 million of new money to the cops in order to protect us from illegal immigration. I don't feel threatened by illegal immigration. I feel a little bit more threatened by this new money you invented to give to the police.
Yeah, I don't think illegal immigrants really pose much threat to me. I think usually they're trying to keep their head down pretty low and do what they can to make it. Like, cops, on the other hand, are looking for things to give you problems for. So,
Yeah. They also supported law enforcement with additional investment in the Department of Public Safety and Iowa Law Enforcement Academy, And with policies such as covering costs for peace officers moving to Iowa, also ensured a person cannot receive bail for the murder of a police or corrections officer. How often were people getting bailed out for
I
that?
I know, that's what I was thinking too. Wow. It's really going to keep us safe for that when that happens like once every like 5 years or whatever.
God, yeah. How many people are being held on bail for murdering a cop? That's crazy. They created additional laws and tools for law enforcement to deal with organized retail crime and smash and grab mobs. These were initiatives I worked on with our county attorneys and businesses. Thank God businesses have the ear of Representative Steve Holt.
I have seen, you know, the videos of the smash and grab mobs. I have never in my life seen that in Iowa.
Yeah, has that happened here?
No. I'm going to say no, not with no research. I remember in, you know, 2020, the COVID thing, where there were like fake ass militia guys running around trying to like board up Walmarts yes, in advance yes. of supposedly people coming to loot and ransack everything, which did not happen.
Yeah.
Even under like, you know, one of the biggest like social breakdowns of our yeah. of our lives.
Yeah, they boarded up the Coralville Hy-Vee like a couple days after George Floyd was murdered. It's like,
yeah,
what's even in the Hy-Vee that I want? I'm gonna loot the Chinese food.
Oh man, I think I might get some Chinese food after we record.
I had some Szechuan yesterday.
Nice.
They also gave badly needed pay increases to our judges and created additional incentives for indigent defense. What do they mean by that? Additional incentives for indigent defense?
I think that's like public defender stuff.
Yeah, that's what indigent defense means, is when you're entitled to a public defender.
Oh.
Do they mean incentives for the public defender? Because that sounds pretty good.
I would imagine, yeah. I would imagine that's probably what that is. That's a big problem. So that's a good thing if they are, in fact,
yeah.
trying to provide incentives sure for public defense.
I'm sure it's similar to the pay increases for teachers, just falling yeah. far, far flat of the actual
now,
need.
Judges, I don't know. I don't know if judges are needing those pay increases that badly.
They don't work that hard. They just like, sit there.
I mean, honestly, yeah.
They just sit there and sign warrants.
That's like you spend all that time in school and then you coast for the rest of your life. Like,
In healthcare, they continued to fund financial assistance programs for healthcare professionals who stay in Iowa and increased funding for nursing homes and allocated money to the Department of Inspections and Appeals. Again, sounds like probably on the right track, but I'm sure it's not nearly enough to take care of the problem.
No, and it's a huge problem. I mean, I see articles about this all the time with like the substandard care and lack of employees for nursing homes. And I think it's like one of the worst in the state. So this again, probably is like I don't know what, I mean, he's not really providing a lot of specifics
no,
on
there's
these,
not a lot of
these bullet points, but I'm guessing that it's not enough to adequately address the problem.
No. It's a tough job. There's a lot of turnover, a lot of high stress situations, and not a lot of training. Doesn't pay well.
Yeah,
it's
a lot
recipe
of old
for
here.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
A lot of not so rich people here.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to a med student this weekend and found out that they like so grad students typically they get some kind of like assistantship when they go to grad school, and so they get mm-hmm. paid some meager salary. But in the medical field, you don't. Like, you just have to pay, like, tuition, and you do all this work for free, which is nuts.
Wow, yeah. I mean, yeah, they, for so many years, just rely on people like, oh, like, you actually want to help people? Well, then you should better be willing to accept really shitty pay and really yeah. shitty working conditions. And if you don't, then that means you probably don't really care that much about helping people.
Yeah, don't you care about the mission? I'm getting into nonprofit speak.
I love missions, man. It's like a video game. It's like they just hand you a side quest.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're working for experience points.
Yeah, experience points.
In the realm of economic growth, Our legislature incentivized businesses of all sizes to choose Iowa as their home and targeted investment in rural Iowa with the creation of a new certified sites program to spur economic development in counties with less than 50,000 people. I don't know how many counties that is. I suppose I could have looked that up. I assume what that means is that, you know, large corporations can build some sort of warehouse in a rural county and not pay any taxes. That's kind of how those plans usually go.
I mean, yeah, it's just we're going to just throw some money at people so they can make way more money and, you know, get some shitty jobs for some people in the process and then tout that as a reason to vote for us.
Job creation.
There you go.
Aside from banning guaranteed income programs, in the realm of protecting our founding values, Steve Holt is also celebrating the Iowa legislature protecting freedom of religion by passing the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which prohibits government entities from substantially burdening a person's exercise of religion unless there is a compelling government interest. The way he describes it, it sounds like they did nothing.
I know.
like the government cannot substantially burden a person's exercise of religion unless there's a compelling interest.
Unless it burdens the government.
Yeah. So what's on the scales here? How do you figure it out? But as Keenan Crow told us, this basically just means that business owners can discriminate against gay people, essentially, is the whole point of it.
Yeah. If they're Christian enough.
Mm-hmm.
They've been watching enough televangelists.
Yeah. I wonder if this applies to like what if, you know, a church was like helping immigrants and like the cops wanted to come into the church to like search people's documents and shit. What if the church was like, our religious practice like compels us to not allow you into our sanctuary? Do you think freedom of religion would apply in that case?
I have my doubts.
Yeah, it seems like they wouldn't, they'd probably call that a compelling government interest, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, infringing the rights of minorities is more important than the religion.
Mm-hmm. A religious majority is more important than any kind of minority.
Yes.
Because, you know, as we've seen with the satanic display, it's only some religious freedoms that get protected over others.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have to talk about that again.
I haven't checked.
What's the latest news on that?
I haven't checked in with that in a while. Not sure if that guy is in federal prison yet or what.
Oh, man.
And there's a few things that didn't make it across the finish line that Steve Holt is disappointed about. So in terms of election integrity, they tried to pass a bill which would make updates to our absentee ballot system and remove unnecessary drop box locations. This is a bill that did not pass. How do you spin that as like election integrity? Like having spots for you to turn in your absentee ballots. What if we took some of those away?
Yeah. I don't know if it's really about election integrity. Unnecessary drop box locations. Under what criteria are they unnecessary?
Right.
I think any drop box that can accept an absentee ballot is necessary. I mean,
I don't know if I would even think about it in that like necessary, unnecessary binary. It's like you collect the ballots or you don't, I guess. Like,
yeah.
It's like we closed a few unnecessary polling locations. Taxes. Okay, so the House passed legislation to cut property taxes for child care providers by allowing child care facilities to be taxed at the residential rollback rate rather than the commercial rate. The Senate did not vote on this. You pretend your business is a house. It is a house. I don't know, man.
I mean, many times child care providers are houses.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a bad one necessarily, but
I don't know either, but, more regulation on child care is probably necessary from a lot of the stories that I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Coralville city councilor who resigned a few years ago because her husband was accused of some heinous crimes at their home daycare. He was acquitted maybe last month sometime.
Oh, really?
But yeah, some nasty stuff in that trial, regardless of his acquittal. Don't need to get into that. Eminent domain. I think this is one where Steve Holt is, you know, sort of on the right side of it.
For the wrong reasons.
Well, here's what he says. Last year, the House passed legislation that I helped write to protect landowners by requiring at least 90% voluntary easements to be granted before eminent domain could be requested for the CO2 pipelines, and the Senate refused to take it up. This year, we passed legislation requiring courts to issue a declaratory judgment up front on the constitutionality of eminent domain requests if challenged by landowners. He wrote so much more about this topic than anything else. It's so much more detailed. And so, yeah, the Senate did not act on his bill again. The issue of eminent domain for private development, private economic development projects, is a profoundly important one that should have been addressed in order to protect the fundamental right of private property. The House will continue working on this issue. So that's what you mean by for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, no, they would be totally fine with, you know, CO2 pipelines, whatever kickbacks, you know, all that. Like, they don't mind about the actual, you know, issue of it. They just don't like the government to seize people's property.
Yeah, you gotta, you know, landowners' rights over everything. I mean, hey, whatever stops the pipeline, I guess. And then legislative and staff pay is the last topic of his recap here. Legislators are paid $25,000 a year and have not received a pay increase since 2007. Unfortunately, that just means that only people who are independently wealthy or, like, you know, own a successful business are able to be legislators. Oh, shit, that's exactly what he said. If this is not addressed, so he understands the problem, too. If this is not addressed, only the wealthy, the retired, and those owning businesses with flexibility in their schedules will be allowed to run for office, or able to run for office, he says. We already have young legislators leaving because they simply cannot afford to serve. Okay, now I'm torn on this issue because what if Carter Norman is forced to resign? That would be good. That would be funny.
It would be funny. I mean, yeah, I guess I'm on board with that. $25,000 seems pretty low.
Yeah. I don't know how much time they actually spend.
Yeah, that's the other thing I was thinking too, though, because, you know, I guess now that the legislative session is over, they're just chilling. You know, it's like summer break. They don't really. I mean, they could, like, talk to constituents and stuff, but I don't know how many of them are doing that, you know, making it a really full-time job.
Well, they don't get paid enough to do it. I'm sure if we
that's
just
right.
Double their pay, they'll be way more receptive to all their constituents' demands.
Yeah.
Man, yeah, so he then writes a few paragraphs that are, like, disgusting.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's funny that he talked about those owning businesses with flexibility in their schedules will be able to, or, you know, only the wealthy and those owning businesses with flexibility in their schedules. Like, if you own the business, you have the most flexible schedule of anyone, unless you're, like, just the only person in the company, which I guess does happen. But it's like, I don't know. Every boss I've ever had, every higher up person I've ever had, has taken way more vacation time than anyone else.
Yeah, they come and go as they please. Yeah.
Yeah.
He mostly writes about, like, education stuff in the concluding paragraphs. In response to some public schools ignoring parents and imposing a leftist agenda on their children, that included telling second graders they could choose their gender, allowing children to change their gender without parental consent, being unwilling to remove clearly age-inappropriate books from school shelves, holding drag queen shows and teaching critical race theory, we passed laws to stop the indoctrination, respect parental rights, and ensure age-appropriate materials are in our schools. And then he talks about the bathroom bill. What? Ugh, God. What a nasty man. I guess in conclusion, congrats to Steve Holt for getting most of what you wanted.
Ugh.
But if we're following the Texas path, I meant to say Kansas here, I think that means we get a Democrat governor in a couple years, right?
Rob Sands, he's out here. I've still seen his ads every day. I'm seeing his emails most every day.
Mm-hmm.
He's his war chest is filling. He's scraping, you know, $20 at a time from the most online liberals. Like,
it'll be really funny if he actually manages to become governor after all this.
It will be. I mean, as much as he sucks, I think it's a possibility, but it's hard to say.
Speaking of, you know, you see Rob Sands ads all the time. One of the ads that I see almost every time I look at the Iowa Standard is this ad from Tom Comley. You remember him? He was like, yeah. He was doing security for like the Des Moines City Council and got fired. I think they fired him, right?
Yeah, I think he was like contracted for his like security firm. They just didn't renew it. Yeah, well, I think West Des Moines kicked him out first because they had contracts too. And then they fired him, and then they, yeah, just declined to continue his contract with Des Moines.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was because he was emailing extremely racist memes about George Floyd directly to, like, the city, like, administration.
City manager, yeah.
Yeah. Which is, like, yeah, not good. And I've seen, like, it was, like, straight up, like, George Floyd, like, just attacking George Floyd as a person.
It was nasty. I remember that.
Yeah.
Anyway, he has ads on the Iowa Standard, you know, advertising his security and risk consulting business. He's a well-established expert witness. He does business consulting as well. And while we're talking about people's appearances, he looks like Charlie's creepy uncle from It's Always Sunny.
I don't think I've seen some of Always Sunny, but I don't know who that character is.
Well,
sorry.
Some people listening may enjoy that reference. Okay, one other thing I wanted to talk about is this Des Moines Register article about college protests. They're happening again. College protests are sweeping the nation.
I've heard about this. I've heard a little bit about this.
Yeah, big college campuses all across the country. The kids are protesting genocide, and the people who love that genocide are freaking the fuck out.
Yeah, I saw you were attracting some hate online. Someone was projecting their personal issues onto you for simply posting an agenda for like the weekend's events on the Pentecrest.
Yeah, there's some people in Iowa City who have organized a few days of activities outside on the campus, and I don't know. Some guy took this as anti-Semitic hate, and it's like there's a bunch of Jewish people there, man. I don't know what to tell you. The weirdest thing is that he also claimed to be anti-Zionist, and it's like, well, yeah. What does that mean?
But
to
then
you,
he
then?
Was like, literally the only thing on there. It was like one thing that said like the history of anti-Zionism at the University of Iowa or something.
Yeah,
and then he was like, when I read this, I just think that anti-Zionism equals anti-Israel, which is like, I think if you weren't a Zionist, you probably wouldn't like feel that way if someone just mentioned anti-Zionism.
Yeah, yeah.
I also think it's funny that like these people are most of the time completely anonymous, and they're like going after like people like you who are like pretty visible.
Yeah,
you know, and then they're trying to be like, no, you are the active, like, and they're being like randomly aggressive with people online.
Yeah.
And then they're like, but no, these people are the trolls. These people are like the disinformation.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. That was weird, like, too. He accused me of like, what did he even say? Like expert misinformation.
Yeah. I mean, that's what this podcast is, but I mean,
I'm doing propaganda. Yeah.
It is nice that he called you an expert in that, but it's like, you're the troll here. Like,
yeah, bad actors are expertly employing information warfare and media manipulation. And I was just sharing like a schedule of events.
Yeah, how much media attention did that get? I mean, like, what are you talking about?
You know, we are media, and
that's true.
We are manipulating the masses with this media. Well, but speaking of you know, these protests and their interactions with media, I did want to highlight this thing. CNN tried to interview some people at UPenn, University of Pennsylvania, and nobody in the like encampment there would speak to media because these people are smart. Like they figured out that like the media will spin everything they say as like hateful. regardless of what it is. So they only interviewed one guy who was not actually in the encampment. Yeah, and a 19-year-old who was not part of the encampment did speak to CNN. When asked if Israel had a right to defend itself, Sultan Smali countered with, "I think that October 7th wouldn't have happened in the first place if Palestinians weren't living in an open-air prison. That doesn't mean that it was okay, but it means that there was an issue that was ongoing and nobody was addressing, and it was going to be inevitable regardless, because you can't just oppress a group of people for 75 years and think they're never going to do anything back." This is just like a random 19-year-old that they like got to talk to them. He like summed it up perfectly. Like, you're trying to frame this as like a moral question of like, is it okay what they did on October 7th? It's like, well, if you're going to ask that question, what about everything else?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice if the media actually did, you know, get into the context of things, but that would kind of give away the whole game, wouldn't it? I mean,
well, it's nice that they at least like quoted this kid with all the stuff he said.
Yeah. But he wasn't specific enough. He didn't talk about, you know, all of the diplomatic efforts that have failed. He didn't talk about all of the violence that's happened before October 7th. I mean,
yeah,
you know, still can brush him off pretty easily, I guess, but well, he was spitting.
That's a thing that they love. They love to brush people off for not knowing enough. Mm-hmm. You can never possibly know enough to justify your opposition to genocide.
Like, most reporters are like super fucking well-versed on the history of Israel and Palestine.
No.
Like, that's not your normal beat. You're as fucking clueless as any of these kids.
Probably more so, because they're
more like, so, yeah.
These students are like spending their entire day
at a
protest encampment dedicated to this cause. They've probably picked up a few tidbits, you know?
Yeah. Read the fucking signs. Listen.
So I don't know how in-depth we should go on this, but David W. Leslie, guest columnist with the Des Moines Register, wrote this article about college protests and about what are the goals of these protests. Are these feasible goals that these protests claim to be acting towards? His headline is, "In college protests, schools often can do little to actually meet protesters' demands." So he writes a little bit about how college campuses have been host to protests like from the very beginning of like the idea of a college campus. College presidents as far back as Nathaniel Eaton at Harvard in 1639 have lost their jobs at the hands of student protesters. Parentheses, he had a policy of beating miscreants. So
similar. I mean, same things are happening.
Well, yeah, they just sort of they have someone else do the beating for them, and then their hands are clean, right? So that's just one example of a historical the ramifications of a college protest. But then he, you know, brings us to the present day. Protests on the campus have sent major changes beyond college's grounds by bringing intensity and attention to many causes. On the other hand, they have often proved futile as students' attention wanes when they can't achieve instant results.
That doesn't really jive with, I think they're kind of, seems like a lot of the media attention is because they're like, their attention is not waning and these protests are continuing. And I mean, you can bring some cops in to bust people's heads and that usually will do something, but
there might be
some blowback. I mean,
that is an instant result of a kind, right? Other people have talked about this. Like, if college administrations had just like ignored these protests, like they do with most things that their students want, it would probably fizzle out, which is not something that I want. I don't want this stuff to fizzle out. It's disappointing when every protest movement fizzles out because they usually are on the correct side of things and should achieve their goals. But they fizzle out because the people in power never fucking budge. Anyway, it's that instant result that of sending the cops in to beat the shit out of your own students that has resulted in the attention not waning, right?
Yeah.
So they have achieved instant results.
yeah, I don't know. It just is fucked up to say that about like the most like disciplined protest movement that I can really remember.
Yeah.
And like, that's what they're mad about. They're mad. They're not getting interviews. They're mad. Like I saw that sign going around that was like a very reasonable, like list of rules for the encampment, like no drugs, like no sexual activity. And they're like, oh, these fucking prudes, like this is what Hamas wants. Like
the current wave of protests against Israel's war in Gaza seem focused on divestment of university endowments from companies doing business with or supporting Israel's defense capabilities. The merits of the case aside, and it is indeed a complicated mess to untangle, divestment is a blunt and misdirected instrument fraught with legal implications and not likely to affect either corporate practices or Israel's actions. There's
and
a lot
is a
in
student's
that
fault. This is a student's fault that it's actually really hard for the universities to divest because like they're completely enmeshed in like a financial system that supports the interests of America, which therefore supports the interests of Israel. Like,
right. And that's where he goes in the following paragraphs is like, so he's criticizing these students because what they want is a, what do you call it? A blunt and misdirected instrument. He's making this more complicated than it is. These are educational institutions. And theoretically, the purpose of these institutions is to educate people, right? But instead, nah. All their money is tied up with global evil and the students think that that's bad and they should stop being financially tied to global evil. And the rest of the piece is like, but they got trustees, they have financial responsibilities, and it's like, okay, I get that it's like, this is like it would be difficult to actually make this happen, but that's because these institutions are evil and have aligned themselves with evil through years and years of these like investments. It should still be undone, right? Like, just because it's hard doesn't mean that like it's good and has to remain this way.
Yeah. Did you see there's something going around this morning where they're like, some guy wrote an article that was like, students need to, instead of protesting, they should become active or activist investors. So they should put their money into these companies and then get on the board of directors and then like whatever influence they can win. These people are pretty poor. if you had like billions of dollars worth of capital that you could control, then you know it wouldn't be as hard to get, you know, the results that you want. But when you're just like protesting on a college campus and you're like, and that's another thing too, is they try to say that like they're all just rich kids.
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of, even at like private schools, a lot of those kids are low income and have scholarships and they're risking a lot to continue.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, students are getting expelled, like, barred from their own housing. Even professors are getting fired for participating in these protests. It's like they're losing their livelihoods over this, and that's a choice made by the university administrations. It's not like it doesn't have to be like this. Like, yeah, they are aggressively retaliating against these protests, and like in a way that it sort of is surprising to me. Like, they didn't crack down like this on like the BLM stuff in 2020.
Yeah.
Some of that stuff was, I guess, because it started in the summer. I don't know. Obviously, the cities and cops cracked down really hard, but it wasn't like...
Yeah. I mean, maybe because they're more centralized. These protests are, you know, central to the college campuses.
Happening on technically private property in a lot of cases.
Yeah, which, whatever, fuck that. I mean, they'll use that justification for protests in public, too. So it's
it's true. Yeah. Yeah, so he says stuff like... presidents may have little or no say in how a board of trustees manages the trust's assets because they are only one among equals on the board and may not even have a vote. So because...
Hey, man, I'm just a CEO. I'm just the president of the United States.
It's very similar to the, like, what could Joe Biden possibly do to appease you? Yeah.
Sometimes people get trapped up in the little details more with the broader point of, like you said, the global evil that's happening. Like,
and that's It's also another revealing bit about like the structure of these universities is like, what is the point of a university president if they can't, you know, direct the policies of the university?
Yeah. Maybe the president of the college should not be like a CEO and entirely worried about financial concerns.
Right. Right. You know? Yeah. Like, it seems like maybe they only exist to be like a lightning rod. Like, all the students' anger goes towards this one person. Like, they only exist as a figurehead. If you're going to treat them as this, like, powerless participant in the whole structure. Since many endowments are invested in independently managed funds, universities may have no direct path from stock ownership to influence over corporate policy. Even if they could assert their values directly, they would be liable to accountability for their prudence as fiduciaries. Okay, so I guess what this guy is saying is like, in order for the student protesters to actually achieve their goals, they have to overthrow capitalism entirely.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, their prudence, like, well, we can't actually sell, you know, we can't like move these investments because, you know, it would be a big financial risk to the entire organization. So like, that's your justification? Like, burn it all fucking down. Like,
yeah. That's like, my only takeaway from this. Like, there's no actual solution within the system that we already exist in. You can't just like make moral decisions within the evil framework. You have to scrap the whole thing. That's a big task, but it's this, like, he's talking about this like how you would talk about like an actual business. Like, if you're running a business, your only responsibility is to the shareholders, maximize profits. That's the same concept that's going on here. And it's how nonprofits sort of excuse all of their behaviors too. It's like, we have to do what's in the interest of our board. Like, the board wants it this way, so it has to be this way.
Yeah, there's a term for that. It's neoliberalism.
Here we are. I'll read David W. Leslie's conclusion here. Students may freely protest. Oh, thank you. Thank you for your permission, David. But they may neither disrupt university operations nor damage university property without consequence.
They're aware of that. They are fully aware of that, you fucking idiot.
Presidents are hemmed in except to the extent that they can fairly act to protect life, property, and the teaching/learning functions of their institutions.
Property comes before that, though.
Yeah. Properties actually should have been the first part of it, for sure. Mm-hmm. They can, of course, speak powerfully to the concerns of student protesters and should take stands in support of justice, peace, and reconciliation. So they should say the right stuff, but they shouldn't necessarily do anything. Yeah, I think that's you know, that's the plan for a lot of them is if I say the right thing, it will appease them and they will look the other way as I continue supporting the structure that participates in the global evil. But they should also direct students to the most culpable parties in war. Those would be the politicians ordering and directing the violence. College endowment funds have little or nothing to do with the war except in the most indirect way. So college presidents should tell their students to vote.
Yeah. And not for Benjamin, not Netanyahu.
Yeah.
It's like, so where do they start, you know?
Right.
I guess it's like you said, end all be all is voting. But I think there might be some limits to that. We might have discussed that before many times. There might be limits to what voting can actually accomplish, especially when, you know, the only viable options are two different flavors of the same thing. Like,
yeah. Both parties like the way it's going right now. At the end of the
day, nothing will fundamentally change.
Yeah, that's right. Never forget. He said that. I think the question you asked is the right one. So where are they allowed to start? Because and directing their ire at the politicians, obviously everyone involved in these like university encampments is critical of the president, but he doesn't give a fuck. He said I didn't actually watch that that like press conference he did the other day, but he said like, yeah, these kids should get their asses kicked by the police. You know, basically, like,
yeah,
he's not going to change course at all as a result of this. So obviously this is wrong. What are they allowed to do? This is only indirectly related. So no, you can't start there. You got to go more direct. What do you want them to do?
Like I said, pool their money together.
Buy Raytheon.
Yeah, buy Raytheon, man.
That was just a very frustrating article to me.
Yeah, it's a very frustrating, I mean, the whole thing, it's like, we haven't probably talked about it enough on the podcast, and also it's, you know, millions of people have made the point that it's like centering the college protests over what's actually happening in Gaza, which we haven't really, I mean, it's tough because it's so brutal and so terrible that it's not a fun subject to talk about. There's many people who are covering it, you know, much better than we ever could.
Yeah.
But most people obviously at this point know the deal. Like it's the attempts to obfuscate what's happening are like more and more useless as time goes on, and continued military escalation against like a captive population. Like there's really no way that you can spin it and make it look any different.
Yeah. It's just evil. And nobody's buying it.
Yep. It's fucking bad. I mean, I've been incensed about this, like, in the election year, it's not good. And like, that was the first comment you got from that guy was, you posted something completely unrelated, and you're like, well, you want Trump to win?
Yeah, it's like, I didn't fucking say anything about the election at all. Like, I didn't even say anything about Biden. I just said, people are doing, like, a sort of protest on the lawn here. He's like, well, things will be worse under Trump. It's like, okay, I know. They're going to be. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I just prefer that neither of them win? Like, I mean.
I think sort of subconsciously, everybody sort of recognizes their own powerlessness with like electoral outcomes. And they can't accept it. So they just get mad at everyone.
Absolutely.
They lash out at their fellow citizens instead of, I don't know. The only thing you can do is try to fucking build a community to, at the very least, express dissent, if not openly revolt.
Yeah, I mean, I think we might be building towards, more open revolts in the future. Like, I don't know what is going to happen from here by any means.
Yeah, a lot like what that 19-year-old said. So even like extremely peaceful occupations of like campus property are met with absolutely brutal crackdowns. Like the most cops you've ever seen mobilized to beat up a bunch of mostly like 20-year-olds camping out on the lawn. And like what the 19-year-old said, it's not about whether the resulting actions are like morally good. It's just an inevitability.
Yeah.
Like suppression and violence are going to have results of some kind. Like,
yeah,
if you're going to beat the shit out of people for absolutely peaceful protests, what are they going to do next time? Probably not going to be as peaceful because they were met with violence. No violence of their own was met with extreme violence from the state.
Yeah, it's... Go see Civil War in theaters today.
Okay.
Which I guess tells you that violence is bad, because, you know, people needed to be told that violence is bad. But like you said, it's like there's certain forms of violence that are legitimized and certain forms that are not.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really have anything to do with morality. I mean, it's people don't choose to do things randomly.
Yeah, it's tough out there. that's the takeaway, as vaguely as possible. It's tough out there. Do your best. Well, that's probably all that we've got today, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
If you would like to call us and let us know about your thoughts on any of these difficult situations. We have a phone number, 319-849-8733. Always love to hear from people who listen to the show. It's nice to run into people in real life who know me from a podcast too. So if you're one of those people, feel free to say hi, because you're probably more outgoing than I am. So you're going to have to initiate. we also have a P.O. box, which I need to pay the renewal for, which is P.O. box 5336, Coralville, Iowa, 52241. You can send us postcards, a weird book you found, copies of your own medical records. I wouldn't mind holding on to that for you.
Autographed copies of Rob Sands headshots.
I've got that somewhere in here, yeah. do you have any upcoming events over there in Des Moines that you know about?
I don't believe so.
Here in Iowa City, well, this is like about a month from now. There's a Democratic primary in Johnson County. My friend Mandy Remington's running for county supervisor. I think it's worth registering as a Democrat temporarily to vote for Mandy Remington in that primary. That's a primary. You just fill out a ballot. It's not any of that caucus bullshit. And if she wins the primary, it's pretty much guaranteed she'll win the general, because this is a Democratic stronghold. And I think Mandy would be a good person to have in there. We'd have three people then in the county board of supervisors who are a little bit more, they wouldn't be like a rubber stamp for the county sheriffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a little bit more pushback. Anyway, June 4th, if that's something that you're interested in helping make happen, mandy4supervisor.com is her website to learn more about that campaign. I'm going to play some music at her campaign fundraiser this afternoon. The podcast is almost certainly not going to be out before then, so you may have missed it. Sorry, everybody. I am playing a show May 18th. Can't read my own notes. I'm playing a show May 18th at Public Space One Cloud House with the Christine Burke Ensemble. A lot of spacey, experimental, weird music.
Hell yeah.
It'll be fun. I mentioned the Patreon at the beginning of the episode, patreon.com/rockhardcaucus. If you like the show, you can give money to us to make the show keep happening. We just released an episode of Bay Not Me Slippin', where we review Slipknot albums. We reviewed Iowa with our friend Chris Wade, who you may know as the producer of Chapo Trap House, a much more famous podcast than ours.
Yeah, that was a really good time. We recorded for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And Chris is super generous with his time and would have gone for longer if we asked him to. I mean, but
he kept us going longer.
I know, yeah, because we were like, it was like half an hour before my bedtime. It's like, can't keep up with the Pacific Coast, you know?
Yeah, it's true. He had a 2-hour advantage on us. But that was a good time, and Chris is a lovely person to talk to, so I think you'd enjoy it. patreon.com/rockhardcaucus to listen to that. I don't have any music prepared for this episode to close us out, so you're gonna hear something after we stop talking. Check the episode.
I'll send
description.
You some synth
yeah
squiggles.
yeah let's do that.
All right, I'll do that. All I'll right. do that.
The premiere.
This is my first
of Evan's
first
synth
music.
Yeah, that's a great idea. If you live in the state of Iowa and you make music, go to rockhardcock.us. There's a link at the top where you can send us your music if you would like to feature it on the show. And I would love to feature your music on the show, so please do that. Okay, that's everything. Thank you, Evan. Thank you, everybody. See you next week. Unless I get sick again, I don't know.
Yeah, or I get sick again. Or, yeah. Well, you could do it. You could do it solo. I could definitely not
awful.
Do it solo.
That would be so
yeah,
bad.
It would be awful, but I feel like you could pull it off. I mean, like, didn't you used to do KRUI stuff solo?
I did a lot of solo stuff on the radio, but I was also filling time with music.
With music, true. Yeah.
And sort of the live element, I feel like, kind of helps with the motivation to keep talking.
Yeah, because then you're like, oh man, dead air.
Yeah,
it's the worst thing.
Yeah,
you can edit that out of a podcast.
God, I can't imagine an hour of me just ranting.
I know
that would be tough for me to record.
I'm embarrassed enough when we have podcasts like this where it's just the two of us and we're talking about like more serious stuff instead of just goofing. And like, I don't know if I I don't know if I have the brain for this right now, you know. But
yeah.
But it's always good to get a pod in.
It helps me to figure this shit out just talking to you.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay, bye everybody. I don't know if I'm still going to include all that in the episode. But
that's fine. I mean, do or don't.
So if this is still in the recording, bye everybody. I'm stopping now.